This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin. You're tuned into the show that explores the narratives of historical landmarks and places in the Klang Valley. In our first monthly special of the year, we're going to be looking at one of KL's classic neighbourhoods, Sentul. For theatre fans out there, Sentul is regarded as home to one of the most famous performing centres here in the city, KL Pack. But for the majority, Sentul is seen as one of KL's older neighbourhoods that has developed its own unique identity. Not to mention the fact that it also housed Sentul Works, a collection of workshops that at one point became one of the biggest industrial depots in Malaya, employing about 5,000 people during its glory years. With that in mind, let's chart Sentul's journey from then till now. Former President of Badan Warisan Malaysia, Elizabeth Cardosa, joins us on the show, and she starts by looking at the origin of its name.
Where did the name come from? The name Sentul is apparently attributed to a plant, a fruit. Wah Sentul, you know, the pokok Sentul. And it's supposed to be, I don't know it, but it's like, if you open it, it looks like a mangosteen, except it's kind of like yellow. The inside of the fruit is still whitish. And, you know, it used to be quite common. I don't think it's so common anymore. And that's where the name comes from, is attributed to have come from. But the area, I think, that we think about historically as Sentul really was bounded on one side by Ipoh Road, which was the road leading north, Jalan Ipoh, now called Jalan Sultan Azlan Shah, I think, that area. On another side, it would be Jalan Sentul. And then you would also have, you know, on the Jalan Sentul side, that is to east, the Gombak River. And to the other side of it would be to the west, would be the Batu River, you know, Sungai Batu. And the Gombak River, of course, is one of the main rivers that feed into the Klang River. And comes, you know, from the hills. And then the tributaries that came off of both Sungai Batu and Sungai Gombak are within the area. You don't see so much of the river system anymore because, you know, it's either underground or hidden because of the new developments and the major developments. And while Sungai Gombak is there, it's kind of you don't actually pay that much attention to it. Unless you're on the train, unless you're aware that it's a river, you may think it's a big monsoon drain, for example, you know. And that's part of, that is also one of the parts of one of the precincts within which the River of Life is supposed to cover. Mm. Okay, but that's a different story. I think Sentul itself was outside of the original city centre of Kuala Lumpur, you know, which started in the 1850s, 60s into the early 1900s. And came about, I think, as a result, well, actually developed mainly as a result of the railway workshops, the big, Malayan railway workshops, the federated workshops that were located there. And they were located there. They started being built in the early 1900s in response, again, to the development, then the bigger development of the railway system in Malaya. Up and down the peninsula, and they needed, there was the railway, the Malayan Railways found a need to have a centralized workshop for repairs, for, you know, building new things, for sorting out whatever problems they had, whatever. And so they built this huge workshop depot in Sentul. There was land, it was outside of the city center, probably cheaper. Yeah. You know, there was already the railway yards at what we call, you know, in the centre of the city, what we consider to be the old railway station between Brickfields, where the South Goods Yard was, and, you know, leading up to the Daibumi area, which is where the North Goods Yard were. And those were really for cargo, for shifting things, but not really big workshops. So because they needed this, they started to develop the railway workshop repairs and, you know, whatever they needed to do, don't ask me. But, you know, it's quite technical, actually. Out there in Sentul. And that was developed by a man called, I've got his name here. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. James Robert Vetavanam, who is very much associated with the Federated Malay States Railway development. And there is a jalan, Vetavanam, in the area, in the Central area, which is named after him. He passed away in 1956, but I think it was named in 1957 after him. And this development was really what brought not just the workshops, obviously, you needed the population and the workforce to work in the workshops. And then you needed to build a housing to house the people who were there. So by, you know, the 1920s, there are population statistics that say that, you know, by the 1920s, this neighborhood of Sentul had about 8,000 people living there, you know, in a city's population of about 50,000. So it was actually quite a big population, and about 4,000 of whom were related to railways, either families of or people who worked in the railways. And so that was kind of like the heyday leading up to, well, the Japanese occupation. And that was really where a lot of it was developed, if you want to look at it. Along with the people came the religious institutions that they set up and the schools that were set up to cater for the communities, that the many different religious and ethnic communities that worked in that neighborhood. And you know, earlier you were saying, you know, it's very Indian. There were a lot of people from Sri Lanka of Indian origin as well, who worked on the railways. I mean, not just as engineers and clerks and, you know, assistant drivers or firemen or, you know, in within the system. They were part of, I suppose, because the British administration had developed the railways both in India as well as especially in Sri Lanka, and they were comfortable with this group of people who were familiar. They knew how to build. They were already familiar having done that. You bring in a sense, a skilled workforce. You come as an immigrant, but you come with a skill. And this was how the system was actually developed. I mean, in the whole of the railway sort of, you know, that was the main economic driver almost that linked the north and the south, you know, through Gamas into Singapore eventually and then to the east coast.
Mm-hmm. And the name of the workshop depot is Sentul Works, right?
Yeah, Sentul Works. So it, parts of it are still there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that most people, I think from the early 2000s will know Sentul West or Sentul East. And when you think about Sentul now, you don't think about Jalan Sentul. You don't think about Jalan Ipoh. You don't think about, you know, the railways as much, you because there's the KTM commuter. Yeah. And then there's the more, how do I say, the Sentul Park that was developed in an area that used to be the golf course, the Sentul Golf Course. Originally, I think when it first started, it was started as a golf course for the higher-ups, officers of the railway administration. You know, you had, it was a 9-hole golf course. Mm. And then later it, you know, in the colonialization process, it became open to locals. And it was not a golf course that, while it was very much associated because it was next door to the Central Workshops, it wasn't that you saw or you would find, it wasn't, you know, golf wasn't a habit, shall we say, wasn't practiced by the local worker in the workshop. It was really for, it was a more elite kind of sport. But, you know, it was there and the grounds were there around that gave a lot of really nice open land. And if you look at it now, you know, a lot of mature trees now are on the site. You don't have evidence of the links, the golf links, except for the fact that if you know much about golf, you will kind of like see, oh, this was would have been where the you know, the fairway would have been, and this is where. But if you don't, unless you're walking it, you will just see really open park area, parkland, which is what you see now. And as I said, most people associate it with Central West, you know, condominiums, high end, pretty high density, but having the park in there as that part of their hinterland, so to speak. Mm. And then Central East, which is also high rise, not as much green space around it, but that's the association now one has. I think, you know, if you talk to most people now, that's what they will think about Central as.
Mm. This whole label of Central East and West, mm-hmm. is a fairly recent one, right, I think?
Well, yeah, I don't think it's more than, you know, 2 decades old, really. Mm. I think less than that. It was, you know, there was land it was not being fully utilized. There was a demand for more upmarket housing, I suppose, you know, changing the profile of an area. If you want to live in a more modern lifestyle, not just individual houses. And remember that there was a lot of housing in that area, which was related to the railways, the quarters.
But are they residential or?
Yeah, those were quarters. Those were residential. Mm-hmm. They would have been, they could have been like double story, single story, you know, either individual detached places or in a link, in a row. Four different grades of offices. I think there were four classes of houses. Yeah, I think there were, or you know, there were many classes of houses. It's like if you are in a rather hierarchical system, right? You know, depending on where you are in the pecking order, you're the big boss, you know, you have big house. And if you are the, you know, the coolie, so to speak, the worker, you know, that's just there as a general worker, not skilled, you will have, you know, a different level of housing available to you. But the houses were the residences, you know, people were given, people who worked in the railways were given this kind of, or were allowed to live in this area because it was just really near work. There was no big commute, you know. But with those people and with their residential area, you had a commercial area that came up. You have what even now today is called Central Pasar, yeah, because there was the pasar there. And so markets, you have religious buildings, you have, which reflect very much the ethnic and religious, you know, inclinations of the population. So you have a Buddhist temple, major Buddhist temple there, which is a Sri Lankan Buddhist temple, which then that tells you that there were Sri Lankans who were Buddhists who established that temple. You have Tamil Catholic churches or Sri Lankan Catholic churches. You have a Tamil Methodist church. You have Hindu temples, which are South Indian Hindu temples. And you have Sri Lankan Hindu temples, you know. So you have different groups, partly because of language and, of course, because of culture. Then you have schools that came alongside that catered for this, the population. So you have Tamil schools, primary and secondary. You have Chinese primary and secondary schools. And then you have the so-called, you know, missionary schools, the La Salles and the convents that came out, or the Methodist afternoon school, for example, that catered to the community that was around there. Because people, again, you know, you didn't have the capacity to travel long distances to your school. It was your neighborhood. You went to the school in your neighborhood. And so the number of schools reflected also the kind of population that was there.
That's Elizabeth Cardosa, former president of Padang Warisan Malaysia, sharing the history of Sentul. We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and this is I Love KL on PFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin and I'm joined by Elizabeth Cardosa from Padang Warisan Malaysia in our monthly look at buildings and places in the city. This month, we're looking at Sentul, and in the first part, Elizabeth has given us a bit of an overview on the area and its history. Now, let's look at how Sentul has evolved, especially after independence.
I think that, you know, after independence, it was sort of, you know, Sentul was still just Sentul. I think that you didn't really, Sentul wasn't a focus unless you had something to do with the railways. And even then, if you had something to do with the railways, but the thing, so to speak, you had to do with the railways was based out toward the Brickfield side, toward the KL railway station side, Sentul was not really part of your main, you know, horizon. Because at Brickfields, you also had your railway clubs, for example, your sports club. You had sports clubs for the railway staff in the central area, but you also had that similar kind of facility for the railway families staff in the Brickfields area. So those were the two kind of main hubs, yeah, for KL that you think about related to the railways. I think one of the interesting things is, for example, there is a gurdwara that that is next to on off of Jalan Haji Saleh. And the Gurdwara is, if you talk to the people who worship at the Gurdwara, who use the Gurdwara, the Sikh community there, a lot of them had roots with the railways. So, and it was sort of considered to be the railways Gurdwara. Like the Gurdwara in off of Pataling Street is considered to be the police Gurdwara, you know, and the one on Pahang Road is the business community's Gurdwara, because you go where your main community is. In this case, you know, a lot of the Sikhs would then worship at that particular Gurdwara, their religious, you know, center. And that was built in the style of the Golden Temple at Amritsar. And the old shrine, you will still see if you are able to get to it. Most people don't actually know it because it's kind of like hidden now by other buildings which are much taller than it. And you don't, like I said, you don't necessarily venture into a neighborhood that, unless you have a purpose for going there, unless it's known as sort of, oh, this is the best X, Y, or Z kind of food, or, you know, you know, you wouldn't venture into a neighborhood that you're not familiar with or that you don't have any purpose, yeah, in going to. So that, I think, is the difference between Central. But there's lots of housing that's still private housing that's still available and still present in Central. It's just off the main roads. Mm. And until and unless you venture off the main roads, and these are single-story or double-story, really older neighborhoods that grew up in the 40s, 50s, 60s. You look at the style of architecture and the type of housing. That was what it provided, you know, when KL was redeveloping itself after the Japanese occupation and trying to, you know, have more housing. And that was what came out of this particular area. I think as a reflection, if you look at the kinds of schools, because there's Tamil schools and the vernacular language schools, that's really, it's a reflection of the kind of more the community that lived there.
In terms of characteristics and identity, I think because Sentul, I think, still managed to retain most of its, I guess, characteristics, most of the, I guess, template of the space, the place there, I guess you can still pretty much say that it still embodies the spirit of yesterday.
I think what I love about Central, that shows you the resilience of a place. Mm. It's not just the fact that those religious buildings still exist and they are vibrant. Yeah, they are used. They have large communities that even if, let's say, somebody has, you know, you have moved away from the area, you still will go back because that becomes your home place. Yeah, you know, that's where your family roots are. That is especially in terms of like the Buddhist temple, like in terms of the Sikh temple, that you have your roots and it's very clear. The other thing that I think always demonstrates to me the resilience, and that's something I kind of look for every time I go by, is to see whether the cows are still there. There are schools in the neighborhood, and there used to be this open, it was called Jalan Tanah Lapang. I mean, there was a street that was called Jalan Tanah Lapang because it was Tanah Lapang. You know, it was an empty. But that was where one of the railway clubs was. You know, it was an open playing field. So people would play football and whatever. You know, kids would use it, yeah. And certainly in the, when I kind of first, I mean, you know, Central was always there on the periphery of my knowledge, you know, a neighborhood that I would go to. But in the sort of 1980s, I sort of started going there once a month because my husband was doing some legal aid and it was in Central. The clinic was in Central. So I would just go just sajala. And that's kind of how I, you know, and so you kind of go like, oh, okay, right. So there's a particular kind of neighborhood. There are, you know, there's particular types of food. You will say, okay, let's go and eat banana leaf or whatever. And then I saw the cows and they would just be wandering on these roads, you know. And they would be grazing on this field and the cowherd would bring them across. And then you would think that in the sort of more modern, especially when Central Eastern came up, started to be developed in the early 2000s, you know, one would have thought that the cows would have disappeared, right? Well, to today, the cows are still there. And I think that for me, they live in the most, I think, you know, maybe not the best of conditions because they have been scrunched into really a very small pen in an area that they used to, I think, probably have more space around them. But I still see them, you know, and on holidays, you see them walking on these big highways. And I think that to me demonstrates the resilience of a place, you know, and I enjoy it for that reason.
Yeah,
I think.
So, I mean, I think that's a good segue to discuss about modern Sentul, right? I think there is this perception that despite being quite, I won't use the word traditional, but quite
an older neighborhood.
An older neighborhood that has, I guess, to a certain extent, survived or resisted against development. I think Sentul now also facing that problem, right?
I don't know that it's a problem, and I don't think it was a question of resisting it. You know, I mean, it's like, you know how when a place becomes crowded and then it just expands and the balloon, you know, gets bigger, and so new neighborhoods form, and it has a different catchment, it has a different attraction, and people, you know, if you work in an area, you might want to live closer to an area. If you work in an area that used to be very congested, you might want to be looking for other things. I think that that's one of the things. I think gentrification, while it's not something that we necessarily, you can't slang it on the one hand. On the other hand, I think it's a question of how do you manage this transition between old neighborhoods and people who grew up and live in those old neighborhoods. And I live in one of them in PJ, for example. And then the insertion, the parachuting in of this more modern, faster paced, you know, high rise, whatever that comes along with it. And your neighborhood changes. Yeah. And how do you then balance what was there traditionally and what you might hold on to because you are a long standing resident? You know, and what you enjoy knowing your neighbors, you enjoy being able to walk out on the street and feel safe, which is what I think everybody wants, to feel safe, to feel like it's a place you belong. And then when the neighborhood changes, you know, there's always this tension between the old and the new. So, I don't think it's a question of like good or bad or, you know, one saying one is exclusive and cannot include the other. I don't think one precludes the other. But it really is a question of, how does it work together to bring out the best values? And sometimes it doesn't. Quite often, because I'm a developer, I just think about, I'm a house, you know, I only think about my boundaries. And I don't think about what happens in front of me, beside me. I don't care. And really, that maybe it is that lack of sensitivity that we have now. Sometimes there's too much of intervention from community onto the private individual. Then there's the other extreme where there is no interaction, and you know, you are your own world. You know, you make your own decisions, and you don't feel that whatever you do has any impact on anybody else. But of course, in life, I mean, we know that whatever we do does have some impact, greater, smaller. But just because we don't see it, doesn't mean that it doesn't happen, you know. And I think that, yes, I think in the past, you know, 15, 20 years, the nature of Sentul, certainly the majority of people would, you know, if you say to people Sentul, they would say, oh, KL Park, oh, Sentul Park, oh, Sentul East, oh, Sentul West. You know, there used to be cinemas there. There were 3 or 4 cinemas there. I don't think you see any cinemas there anymore. I don't think I've seen, I may be wrong, but I don't think I've seen like a Cineplex coming up in what we will consider central, except of course, you know, KL Park has a little screening room, for example, but it's not a cinema, which is a public place. And KL Performing Arts Centre is part of the YTL development, which is a performing arts centre established by YTL within this area called Central Park, which is many, many acres. But at the end of the day, if you look at the KL local plan, all of that is up for, it has the potential for major intensive residential and mixed redevelopment. So you're talking about the possibility that each of these lots, including next door to, or even the KL Performing Arts Centre itself, could be potentially, because the land has already been converted, into high-rise intensive development, you know, a plot ratio of 10 or more, which is huge. And if that comes to pass immediately, then, you know, there is no period of transition. And I think now we're going through this transition that is being negotiated between the old Sentul and the more today Sentul.
Yeah. I guess when I brought up the whole development thing, it wasn't, well, maybe to be fair, I was slightly a bit of a traditional romantic.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not that I'm against development. It's just that maybe the manner in which things were developed.
Yeah.
I guess, and we always, I mean, we've discussed this before, but we're always slightly a bit defensive when it's more of a gentrification rather than a sterile development, right?
Yeah.
I guess that element makes it slightly more uncomfortable, I guess. I mean, but
I think it's something that one has to understand and balance, You know, you have to look at it from many, many different perspectives. But if the only drive is to say, how much profit can I make? Then it is, you know, really in terms of all the other values, if we're talking about being a wholesome society, that's kind of lost. You know, in this whole, you know, the only mark, the only benchmark is profitability, is, you know, this big dollar thing. What about the rest of it? You know, don't we value anything else? And how do we balance that? And do we say that just because you are older or you've been there, you know, you are less important, you know, because we're young and we're vibrant and we have our future in front of us, that we're more important? Everybody has their importance. It just is depending on who looks at it for what reason. And it is that level of negotiation that I think in a lot of new developments doesn't happen, because I buy the land, I convert it because I have a right to it. Well, yes, you have a right. Legally, you have a right. But there are these issues, and when it comes to gentrification, which are, well, you know, there are, not to sound sanctimonious, but, you know, there are maybe other values, you know, moral considerations, cultural considerations, historical considerations that should bear weight, but are often, for most part, ignored. And in the drive to make the biggest profit or to be, you know, to chase after whatever is considered to be modern and good and great, you know, that kind of thing.
Earlier in the show, I mentioned KL Pack and its role in giving Sentul a prominence, at least among theatre aficionados. Seeing that KL Pack has now made Sentul a cultural hub of sorts, I wonder whether the setting up of it there was a continuation of Sentul's existing cultural prominence.
Sentul was always known as sort of, oh, railways, you know? I think that, you know, historically, that would be the perception of Sentul, or workshop, or railways, or particular group of people, you know, whether it's an ethnic group or class or whatever, you know, that kind of, that's how Sentul would tradition, unless you lived there. If you didn't live there, that would be, you know, a general overall, I would say, perception. If you lived there, you would have a different view, obviously. And I think that KL Pack, this kind of modern contemporary culture was not part of the Sentul story. Although, you know, the drummer, Louis Bergasem, he comes from Sentul. I mean, he used to play at the church by Ipoh Road, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, that's where I think his, you know, his drumming skills were developed, you know. Louis will probably question my, you know, interpretation of this. But, you know, that was a place that, you know, there are people who came from that neighbourhood, who have moved into other neighbourhoods, who have progressed, who have made names for themselves in different ways. So we can't just, you know, ring fence and just say it must be like this and you must keep it like that, because you don't put a place under wraps and, you know, saran wrap it and just say it cannot change. Obviously, places will change with time. They will change with... there are lots of reasons why change happens. But in terms of understanding the character of an older place, when it had a particular life to it, and while there may have been slightly more upmarket neighbourhoods compared to the general, shall we say, but I think the bandwidth wasn't as dramatic as it is now. Okay. You know, now you have the very upmarket, gentrified, you know, condominium, very modern lifestyle. Let's go, you know, to the theatre, which is great. You know, that there is such an opportunity that the community at large in Malaysia and in the Klang Valley have this opportunity, you know, to be able to experience that. Then you also then have the sort of not very, you know, just more rundown or poorer neighbourhoods, which are still apparent. And so that distinction, the gap becomes more obvious. But Sentul still has its railway story because you still have the KTM stop there, which is part of the commuter stop. You still have this road called Jalan Perhentian, which, you know, everybody kind of doesn't even know it's called Jalan Perhentian because that's where the commuter station used to stop, na? Your Hentian. Yeah, but, you know, you just see it as part of the bypass road that leads off of, you know, Ipoh Road to Sentul Road. That's kind of something you just say, okay, I'm at this junction, I make a right turn, and I'm on this road that skirts, you know, the Sentul West development and Sentul East on one side. And that's really what you look at. You don't think of it as, oh, Jalan Perhentian. Why is it called Jalan Perhentian? You know, it's called Jalan Perhentian for that reason. The other thing that people who drive maybe or live or interact with the area a little bit will see, though, when, and that again is, you know, something when I talk about the resilience of the neighborhood, is because of the Gombak River, it is a feeding ground for birds, for example. And, you know, the don't ask me the names of the birds, but they look like these wading birds, like cranes or herons. Or I don't know what they are exactly, which you see on the highways, and you see that they feed, you know, in the river, in the waterway there. And if you are observant, you know, in the mornings and in the evenings, you will see the birds coming out from the Zunugara side, from Melawati and the Ampang side toward this, following the waterways, because they're part of the feeding ground. And I hope that with the River of Life development, that we will still have that retention, you know, where the opportunity for flora and fauna to exist and coexist with the gentrification of the neighborhood, you know, persists and almost resists.
You've been listening to I Love KL, and this week Elizabeth Cardosa from Bandar Warisan Malaysia joined me for our conversation on Sentul, one of KL's older and unique neighbourhoods. And that's the end of I Love KL's monthly feature on historical buildings and places in the Klang Valley. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl, our app which you can find via Google Play and the App Store, and also Spotify. Don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week only on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.